Hello, and welcome to the OTP, the one true podcast for fanfiction readers, writers, and lovers. As always, I'm your mod, Enthusiasm Girl. Today's podcast topic is the very thing that this podcast takes its name and the imagery of its logo from, one true pairings, or OTPs, and the practice of shipping. Shipping, or pairing two characters off romantically, is an extremely common fanfiction trope. It's so common, in fact, that the mainstream perception of fanfiction often doesn't seem to really be able to distinguish between the two. While genfic does exist and plenty of great fanfiction doesn't focus on romance, I would argue that it's difficult to be a part of the fanfiction community and not pick up an OTP or two. Whether you're into het, slash, have an OT3 or above, or commit yourself to a particular bro-TP, the lingo of shipping, as well as its most common cliches and varieties, and the sometimes intense wars and schisms it can cause within fandoms, should be pretty familiar to anyone listening to this. Today we're going to delve into who our own OTPs are, we're going to talk about the issues or problems that arise when people take their ships too seriously, or the impact that such a heavy focus on relationships and romance has on fanfiction as a community. This episode was a ton of fun to talk about, and I really hope that you enjoy listening to it even half as much as we enjoyed recording it. And if that's the case, then you are in for a treat. I'm joined in this conversation by J.M. Fry, who we've had on the show before, and a new contributor whose name is Dai. And I want to make sure everyone listening knows that for more info on them, including links to their own fanfiction to read, you can check out their bios on our blog at otpodcast.tumblr.com/contributors. So, let's get into it. So, I have JM and Dai with me today, and we're going to talk about OTPs and shipping wars, and shipping in general. And we're going to start by talking a little bit about our own history with OTPs and shipping. Why don't we start with you, Dai? Why don't you tell us a little bit about your own history with fanfiction, OTPs, and with shipping?
Sure. So I first started reading Inuyasha fanfiction in probably grade 7, and my OTP at the time was Kagome and Shishomaru. I used to love that pairing so much. And then that's how I first discovered fanfiction. And then I moved on to Harry Potter fanfiction. And I would say I don't really have an OTP in Harry Potter. I like a lot of ship pairings, but I don't have one favorite one because there's just so many. Hermione is one of my favorites. Harry Potter and Hermione is another favorite. I like too many to choose. And now I've evolved to Marvel fanfiction, and I do have an OTP in that one. I am a hardcore fan of Frost Iron. I'm not sorry. I'm overly obsessed about it. And I do like other pairings in there as well, but nothing beats Frost Iron for me.
Are you a hardcore shipper, would you say, Dai, or is it, do you read a mix of everything?
I would say I'm a bit of both. When it comes to certain characters, I'll read only about that character, but different pairings that character is in. An example being Tony Stark. I will usually only read Tony-centered fics, but I will read him with a variety of people.
And JM, what about you? Who have your OTPs been over the years, and what's your history with shipping?
I didn't really have a lot of shipping and OTPs and stuff when I first started reading fanfiction. I mean, a lot of what I read was the genfic. I didn't really like the weird romance stuff because the romances weren't reflecting what I was seeing on television or in the films, or I wasn't reading the books, so I didn't quite understand where people were getting this from. And then I started watching Stargate Atlantis, and I totally saw the chemistry between John Shepard and Rodney McKay, and I was like, oh, I get it! Okay, this is where our ships and OTPs come from, because I never... Personally speaking, I never saw it with Kirk and Spock. I never saw it with any of the shows. But then when I started watching SGA, I was like, oh my god, the UST in here is unbelievable. So I did totally start shipping at that point. I became a McShap shipper is my SGA OTP. I don't really have any other OTPs, except for, I hesitate to call it John Locke, because that sort of locks you down into BBC's Sherlock, but what I like is the relationship between John Watson and Sherlock Holmes, whether they're in-house or the Conan Doyle canon, or if it's Elementary, or if it's Sherlock, or Private Lives of Sherlock Holmes. No matter what incarnation these characters have, I can't help but see this beautiful chemistry, this beautiful deep friendship between them, that I like to imagine as romantic. I mean, I have an author friend who says, quite rightly, that one of the concerns of being a shipper or OTP or slashing every character is that it privileges a romantic relationship over a deep friendship. And it's something that I actually try to catch myself on, is when I see a deep friendship between characters, that I don't invalidate that deep friendship by immediately imagining them boinking like bunnies. But definitely McShep and John Locke are the two where I'm like, oh, they're obs boinking. Totally.
All right. So just a little bit about myself for some context here. So I kind of didn't really ship too much when I started reading fanfic, even though I was into X-Files fanfic at one point. It was never really with the intent of my OTP being Mulder and Scully, like most people who kind of approach that world. And it wasn't until I started really getting into a combination of two things at the same time. So Gilmore Girls and Star Trek Enterprise were both kind of around the same time for me. And then I kind of became, on the one hand, my first ever slash OTP was Trip Tucker and Malcolm Reed on Star Trek Enterprise. So I started reading quite a lot of that. And
see, that's chemistry.
Yeah, and you know, for me, it was an opposites attract thing, right? Then, on the other hand, even though I didn't read as much fic for it or write as much fic for it, I got really, really invested in Rory Gilmore and Jess Mariano on Gilmore Girls, to the point where even though I love Supernatural with all of my heart today, I still sometimes watch the show and just kind of flip Jared Padalecki the bird for being the third wheel kind of rival for Rory's affections versus Jess on Gilmore Girls. I totally, totally shipped the two of them very, very, very hard, where I got super invested in it, where after he left the show, I wasn't as involved in the show anymore. So I do have my occasional things that I ship. I also agree with you, Di, about the wonder that is Frost Iron fandom.
Yeah.
That was my first huge ship when I started reading Marvel, was Frost Iron. I read a lot of stuff with Steve Rogers and original characters prior to that, because I was kind of not really invested in specific pairings. But once I hit the Frost Iron stuff hard...
Oh man, it drags you right in.
It really does. It really does. So that's my history with shipping and OTPs.
I'm kind of with you there with Steve and the OCs. I think if I had to, what I love about the Marvel MCU is that there's so many different choices for ships that I don't have an OTP. I just like everything. It's like a fruit salad. I like them all. Except Kiwi. No one likes the Kiwi. But I love Steve Rogers and Beth the Waitress.
Oh, really? Yeah.
My heart, just every time, because she's just, you know, we only see her in two scenes and then one deleted scene. But the way that they just hard eyes at one another, it's like if it was a shoujo anime, there'd be roses behind his head.
I'm always a fan of the offbeat ship, too. I never like to usually ship what everyone else is shipping. So as an example, one thing I know Doctor Who fans are kind of going to be like, huh? Is that for a while when I was reading a lot of Doctor Who fic, I was actually shipping 10th Doctor Donna Noble. At a time when everybody was shipping him with Rose, and they specifically kind of laid out when they introduced her in her season that him and Donna Noble were not going to hook up, but it was almost like kind of, they set it up like a bro TP. Like, they set it up like such a deep friendship that there was just a part of me that really wanted to have that thing where it starts as a friendship and you never expect it to become something else, so when it does, it's like a pleasant surprise. I just liked the idea that she was off the table for him from the beginning. And I liked the idea because so many ships had been so about the woman loving the doctor. I kind of also loved the idea that it would be an unrequited thing for him. That he would have to bring her around to it where she would not be interested for a long time, but he would be pining for her because he would realize how amazing she was. So I had this whole headcanon for a 10th Doctor Donna Noble ship for a long time.
That's really lovely, actually.
Yeah.
That's really adorable. I find those make some of the best fan fictions are the ones where they're really good friends. It's almost like your stereotypical, like, rom-com movie where they're good friends, and then it evolves into, like, a relationship, and it's the two people you want to suspect.
Yeah, and I think just going with that, I agree with you. I think those are some of the best written books, books and films and fan fictions. But I think that also comes a lot from specifically us as young people who've been fed most of our lives these love at first sight, you're my soulmate and I just, you know, ran into you on the subway platform kind of chick flick romance stories, where romance narratives don't actually behave that way in real life. Few people fall in love with complete strangers. I mean, I've completely stopped online dating because it feels like going on a first date for a job interview. Like, I hate first dates with strangers because I feel like I'm interviewing them for the job of my future spouse. In real life, generally speaking, people fall in love with people they already know, people they grew up with, or friends of friends, or people that they end up hanging out with at conventions a lot, or people from the same social circle, or people who hang out at the same bar. I think of this friends to lovers narrative that we see so often in fan fiction is because we never see it, almost never see it, in mainstream narratives or mainstream media texts, and that doesn't reflect our lived experiences.
See, I don't know, because I feel like there are two types of shipping that people predominantly will do. So I do think that you have a lot of shipping that is your kind of deep friendship evolves into love shipping, where the two people just know each other so well and have a rhythm. So I think that that's where some of the UST for Mulder and Scully came from. Or, you know, when you look at Steve and Sam, or certain pairings, I think, lend themselves to that. Oh, these two people have a trust and a friendship and a bond.
I would say Steve and Bucky is definitely a pairing where they were, like, really close together when they were back in the day before them getting frozen and everything. And then they get reunited and, yeah. Become really adorable, yeah. And I love it.
I was just gonna say, I don't think Sam. Did you say Sam and
Sam
Bucky?
And Steve?
Sam and Steve. See, I don't see Sam and Steve being the slow burn friends to lovers. I see them being the damn. Yes, I'll have some of that, please.
Pretty much. Do you see that?
The immediate. I would like a slice of that roast beef cake.
I could see that.
Well, considering how they met in the movie as well, it was just kind of like a sudden meeting, and it was kind of like joking around, and they just kind of hit it off really quickly, so it definitely adds.
You can't tell me that that was not a meet cute.
It was a meet. It straight up
was adorable.
What I was going to say is that there seem to be two types, right? So you have the fluffy shipping on the one side of friends becoming lovers, but then you also have the people who ship, and this was me too, like I said, coming in with kind of the Star Trek pairing that I had, and I like the antagonistic opposites attract. Take two people who hate each other, and there are certain people who ship that. So you'll have your Harry Potter shippers who ship, you know, Harry with Hermione or Ron, and then you'll have the people who ship Harry with Draco, right? Yes. And I kind of am really attracted to that idea, too, where you can have complete opposites. And I mean, sometimes the shows even embrace that. You look at Buffy and Spike, you know, that kind of...
Not exactly the healthiest relationship. Let's not hold that up as a paragon of
anything. No. But I'm saying for people who ship, especially I think the people who want to ship maybe smuttier or angstier and less fluffy, like that's not what they're looking for in fic. Then I think you go antagonistic. You go, these two people hate each other, you know, like Sam and Diane on Cheers, you know, they're smacking one another around, they're dom sub, where one of them has to kind of give, you know? I think that that was why people were attracted to Stoney, to Steve and Tony, right?
Yeah.
I don't think that that came from a place of friendship, because the big scene that kind of propelled all of the shippers in that fandom was the scene in Avengers where they are in each other's faces ready to punch one another.
Yep, take that suit off. What are you? Naked and ready.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. So I think it's funny because I think an OTP can actually tell you a lot about what somebody's looking for at a fic. Necessarily, yeah. or what they might like to read, or what's going on, if you have either one of the two extremes, right?
And then you have the people that just like everything.
Yeah, you have people who ship anybody with anybody.
Personally, I'll read a little bit of the opposite attract. I'll read the angst. I'll read the fluffy friendship. I will read pretty much anything as long as it's well written. I'm down. And has Tony in it if it's Marvel.
So the other thing I wanted to ask you guys is, how do you feel about... So some pairings seem obvious. So we talked about some of the big Marvel ones, you know, Steve and Tony and Stucky, and we talked a little bit about Harry Potter. I think some pairings are kind of obvious. Like, when you see them, it makes sense in the fandom that those pairings exist. And then you have other pairings, I feel like, that become inexplicably popular based on almost no time in the actual canon interacting with the character. So for me, the inexplicable one for me is Clint Coulson in Marvel fandom. And I know we're talking a little bit about Marvel fandom, but I mean, it's the one all three of us kind of...
Well, for example, you can talk about Mycroft. So Mycroft and Lestrade have never canonically been on screen at the same time in BBC Sherlock, I think.
Yeah, so where does that come from then? Do you think that's just people's imaginations or the personalities?
I think it comes from people saying, okay, well, you know, there's John and Sherlock, and that's the main pairing. Where's our other slash pairing going to come from? Like, where are other ships going to come from? So, well, there's Shirwali, obviously, is Sherlock and Molly, and Sherlock Irene, or Irene John, or John Molly. Because you see all these characters interacting. But I sort of feel like, and maybe this is ungenerous of me, and you might get some hate mail for this, and I apologize, but I feel like slash shippers feel like they have to have another ship. There has to be more than one slash ship available. And if there isn't one, they'll manufacture it. And I think that's where the Mycroft comes from. Now, I love Mycroft. I think... I do think the way that the characters are written, they do work well together. I think that it's an understandable ship, and that's why I've continued to read it. But there's literally no basis for it. And I think it just comes from that sort of impulse, okay, well, we have our main slash pairing, well, now we need a second one. And I think that's where Clint Coulson comes from, because we saw them banter to each other in Thor. And you know, well, Thor and Loki are the primary pairing for Thor. So then we just need to have a second pairing. What other two male characters are there that with speaking roles? Clint and Coulson.
Well, what gets me about that one and what made me just laugh out loud was I was watching a documentary on the making of the Marvel films, and it was at a time when Clint Coulson was one of the top pairings in Marvel fandom. Like, you could go on AO3 and it was, like, number three. And what got me was that Clark Gregg was talking about making Thor, and he said that they hadn't cast Jeremy Renner yet when he did that half of the phone conversation that they had, because it was just a phone conversation. And he said that when he saw the movie, he looked up on screen and went, oh, cool, I'm in a movie with Jeremy Renner. And I thought, so all of these fans have constructed this entire history and this huge amount of UST between two people who did not know each other, never met, and weren't in a room together when they filmed that scene.
But sometimes that's the writing, right? Like, it's not specifically the way that... I mean, I would love to see Jeremy Renner's Clint and Clark Gregg's Coulson together, but the way that that relationship, the antagonistic kind of playful teasing, flirting over the phone, tell me what to do, sir, because I'm starting to root for this guy, it's flirting in his own weird Clint way, that would have been present if they cast... somebody else. That would have been present if they cast a female actor. That would have been present if they cast a cat. Those are the lines. It exists in the writing.
So how much of it is chemistry then? Like, can you guys think of a particular OTP that people might have or that people might ship who it solely came from the chemistry of the actors more so than necessarily the lines?
I'd say McShane.
Yeah, you would say that's the chemistry of the actors that they had together.
Yeah.
I would say I wonder to a degree with Wincest if that's also comes into it.
It's not me. Wincest is my no-TP. and it's not the incest so much as that's just not my kink. I'm squicked by that. That's fine. It's your kink. It's not my kink. I'm not making the noises because it's incest. I'm making the noises because I just don't see it. Mm-hmm. I don't see the potential romantic. I see amazing brotherly chemistry. I see two actors who are fantastic at having that wonderful, loving, loyal, antagonistic sibling relationship. They do a great job of that, but I don't see
it. Definitely. I wonder, though, if some of that comes down to the fact that both of those actors are so charismatic, that both of them have such a chemistry, that they are both young and sexy men. Like, I wonder if some of it comes down to the casting and the acting versus anything that's written in the show, because I don't think anything necessarily written in the show, like, would obviously point you in that direction.
I feel like the RPF J-squared OTP is a much more understandable ship to me, because Jensen and Jared, I can understand shipping the fictional representation of those two actors. Because they're such charismatic, attractive, talented young men. I say as if they're not the same age as me.
A pairing I've ran into a lot in Harry Potter where they're not interacting, I think, at all, very little in the series, is Hermione and the Weasley twins. Either with one, with George, or with Fred, or with both. I found there's quite a few fics of that, and they don't really interact at all that I can think of off the top of my head. It's been a little bit since I read the books.
Harry Potter is an interesting case for that too, Di, because
definitely,
you have ships that would have existed when the books were around, and then I bet, and I don't know if you know of any, but I bet you there were ships that did become much more popular based on the movies solely because of the chemistry the actors brought to them, even if they did exist when the books were there too, right?
Definitely. I would. One that makes me think of that is, for me, Neville and Luna. Because I don't know if it's in the books, I didn't really notice that pairing as much, but it really came to in the movies.
Well, they really punched it up in the performances.
Yes, definitely. That is one for sure that I would say is in, like, a pairing based off more so the movies than the books, because those two actors did amazing, and I just really wish they would actually be together.
So we've mentioned a few different kind of name smooshes, kind of, you know, amalgamations of names that people will call their OTPs. And those are part of the fun of shipping, is coming up with,
yes,
kind of adorable names that you can call the pairing. And when you get into OT3s and other ways of looking at it as well, you just get really interesting kind of names that come out of it. So, I mean, we were talking a little bit earlier about some, but we'll share it with listeners. So, Di, you and I were saying that the Marvel name smooshes are some of the most hilarious, great ones around.
I think they are some of the best, in my opinion.
The most fun, at least.
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah, because we were talking about how for the OT3 of Stark, Bruce Banner, and Captain America, I was saying that that's called Stark Spangled Banner, which just kind of tickles me anytime I see it. And you actually had a better one, so what's the better one you had?
It was Banner, Thor, and Loki, and it was called Super Smash Brothers.
Yeah, see, that's...
it kills me. I can't say it with a straight face.
Yeah.
Literally.
Well, and what's nice in Marvel is because they have their superhero names, you get really interesting smooshes, not of the actual name, but of the animals, right?
Yes.
Which always makes things kind of entertaining. And so, yeah, because, I mean, with, like, Mockingbird and Clint, you get Hawkingbird, right? So, yeah, they get really cutesy and fun. And I was saying, like, Daredevil, they call the pairing of Matt and Foggy Avocados at Law, and it goes down to literally an in-joke between the two characters. It's one of those inexplicable ones that if you don't watch the show, you wouldn't know. And it comes down to Foggy at one point mishearing the Spanish word for lawyer, which is Abogado, as avocados, and it's like an in-joke they have, right? They get really entertaining, but what are some of you guys' other favorite name smooshes that you've come across?
I like Spark is such a weird name.
See, my favorite thing ever, and this happens in Hunger Games fandom, and this happens in Star Trek fandom, which is they have to be called Spork, because if they're not called Spork, then you would have to call them Cock.
Yes.
And the other thing about Hunger Games fandom is Hunger Games fans had a big problem, because if you ship Katniss and Peeta, then you would at one point could end up with cat piss. Yeah. So you have to be careful of your name smooshes sometimes.
Also penis.
Yes. And the other thing is, sometimes name smooshes, like, the one that always gets me is for Logan and Veronica and Veronica Mars, they're called Love. But the thing is, yeah, but that's one where if you're saying it out loud, like, it loses something, right? You have to see it with the capital L and the capital V to really understand the name smoosh.
With Harry Potter fanfictions, they don't really have any interesting ones either, because they're all, like, Draco and Hermione's Dermione. The only interesting-ish one is Harry and Hermione, and that's Harmony. But other than that, it's just their names smushed like their actual names smushed together.
I feel like maybe the rise of the interesting OTP title comes from this sort of, in the last 2 years, the hashtag thing.
Definitely.
3 years is when Tumblr has really risen, and if you were to write, you know, love in the hashtags, you're going to get all of these hipster Instagram no filter photos of hearts and locks. And I think a lot of this, you know, Stark Spangled Banner and these really interesting OTP titles comes from the need to hashtag it as something very specific and something very easy to research and find and not mistake for something else.
Yeah, that's possible too. And I mean, there are other times too when a name smoosh just doesn't really seem to happen. So like when I shipped Trip Tucker Malcolm Reed, there wasn't really a name smoosh for them that I can remember being there, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't think with Mulder and Scully, I mean, X-Files fans can correct me if I'm wrong, but shipping in general was so new at the time that maybe there is one now. With the show coming back, I bet you that people have come up with one now. But I didn't remember there being one.
Red Fox called it.
Oh, yeah. That's a really good one. So let's talk a little bit about some of the intensity that happens around OTPs that results in shipping wars, that results in infighting in fandom, and kind of why you think that happens. For a long time, Stony was the number one Marvel ship. And now it's Stucky. Now, personally, I'm an OT3 person. You know, make love, not war.
Exactly. I am the same way.
Sorry,
wait. Is that the OT3 title? Make love, not war?
It should be.
It should be.
Yes.
It totally should be. We're making it now.
But why do you think that people kind of have this passion and they take it to that point where they just cannot foresee that character in any other ship?
Well, because I think they get so passionate about it, like, they develop a connection with it that it's not really obsessed, but it's the only way they see that character. And with Civil War coming out, it's definitely putting that, it's adding to the shipping war, I believe, because we have to pick teams. There's Team Tony, and there's Team Steve, and Bucky's on Team Steve, and I feel like it's just adding more tension to the fandom in general that there's this need to pick a side when it's like, no, man, let's just OT3. It's much better that way.
JM, why do you think people get so intense about it?
From a psychological standpoint, the thing with being a geek and a nerd is that we're not just fans of something. We self-identify with that thing. And this is why we cosplay, and this is why we wear the T-shirts. We as fans, more than any other kind of fandom, more than sports fans, more than hobby train enthusiasts, more than travel enthusiasts or foodies, we self-identify. We integrate what we love into our own personal identities. And that's why you get a lot of nerd boy hit back against girls, fake geek girls invading your space. And that's why you get a lot of nerd girl gatekeeping, because these are people, and I'm not saying just guys, these are people guy fans and girl fans who base a lot of their personal identity on that which they love. And when someone attacks that, they get defensive, they get angry, they feel the need to defend, and they hear someone saying, oh, I'm not a fan of that OTP, as you're wrong. That which you love is wrong, and that the way that you self-identify is wrong. And obviously no one's actually saying that, but when you get a lot of people who are passionate and dedicated and who probably spend a significant amount of time devoted to their fandom, I mean, probably more hours in a day than, say, my father watching the Blue Jays, then people get very embroiled in it, and they get, you sort of lose perspective. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't get passionate and we as fans shouldn't use fandom things to build ourselves, but there always has to be that self-awareness of what I love is, in the end, fiction, and I need to respect other human beings over imaginary make-believe sex.
Definitely. Like, we are all entitled to our own opinions, and I think we need to respect that. Like, just because I have an obsession with Frost Iron doesn't mean everybody else does, or everybody should. If they don't like it, then that's totally fine with me.
And I think one of the real dangers of being a hardcore shipper and shipper wars is when it starts to leak back to the creators. I mean,
yes.
Stephen Moffat left Twitter because people were flipping their shit, sorry for the swear word, over John and Mary. And people were saying, well, it happens canonically, you have to handle it. And that's not a good answer. If people's imaginary sex stories get in the way of them being decent human beings, this is a problem. And especially when they're yelling at the creators and they're yelling at Mark Gatiss and Joss Whedon and everything about, you know, you can't do that. You have to not write that character and you have to change that. Like, that doesn't make a creator want to create anymore.
No.
You yelling at a creator will not make your ship canon. It will just make the creator stop making it. So the best way to get whatever it is you love canceled is to start a ship war with a creator.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah. This is what got me as well about the whole kind of controversy over Natasha Romanoff and how she was handled in Age of Ultron. What I really didn't like was that there were a lot of fans who were really, really adamant that Natasha's character, the whole reason it was poorly written is because they clearly put her with Clint in the Avengers, they clearly put her with Steve in Winter Soldier, and then this was now suddenly it felt to them like a complete 180 to have her be with Bruce. Now, you can say what you want about her being a different character in every movie and characterized differently, and I think that that's kind of fair. But regarding the fact of whether or not they specifically implied that she was in a romantic relationship with either Clint or Cap prior to Age of Ultron, I really feel like that's shippers putting their subtext onto something where when you look at the text, it's not there, right? So you can make the case that you feel that way. But the reality is, I don't feel like it was a 180 for them to put her with Bruce. I don't feel like she was with Steve in Winter Soldier. I don't feel like she was with Clint, you know, in Avengers. I feel like, in fact, some female fans assuming that almost is the opposite of the argument they're trying to make. Like, they're saying that any woman who flirting is her job, who has chemistry with male actors in a movie, well, she must be hooking up with them.
They do these narrative tricks in films that trick the audience into understanding more story than they have time to state. So it's things like the lighting choices they make or the way they choose to cut a conversation together. The best example of this, I think, is the unaired pilot of Sherlock. If you watch the unaired pilot of Sherlock, it is a love story. It is filmed with the exact same cinematic vocabulary as, for example, The Princess Diaries. Same kind of musical cues, same kind of lighting cues, same kind of editing. Everything about the unaired pilot of Sherlock screams that this is a romance. This is a meet cute. These are two people. Now, it's never textually stated. They never say it. But the film is coded as a romance, or the pilot is coded as, the pilot is coded as a romance film. So when you take that and you go back and you look at Avengers, yes, the relationship between Natasha and Clint, while not textually romantic, is visually and with the vocabulary of cinema coded as a romance.
So, I would definitely agree with that.
Yeah, but if you watch A Winter Soldier, it's not coded as a romance.
Well, I think that what gets me, though, is that sometimes, to me, that was just an example of how sometimes I do feel. Like, if you're a hardcore shipper for something, it can almost sometimes prevent you from enjoying other aspects of the story. It can prevent you from fully enjoying what the creator is trying to do, because if they're doing something not in the interest of your OTP, you're checked out.
You know what? And I have to say, reading Cassie Clare's Draco Dormiens before Order of the Phoenix came out ruined me for the rest of Harry Potter. Because I read that fic, and then I read the last three books, and I went, well, this is nice, but what Joe's doing here is actually not quite as good as what Cassie Clare was doing. And then, of course, it turned out that she plagiarized most of that anyway, so...
So the other issue I have, and I want to talk about this, is in addition to kind of some of the infighting, in addition to some of the kind of ways that people hang on to that subtext, sometimes, you know, to the detriment of their own enjoyment a little bit, I also sometimes feel like if you are a person who likes genfic, or if you're a person who really likes stories about the character who gets in the way of a primary OTP going on in the fandom, I feel like you're not then very well served by fandom when it gets really into a particular OTP.
Agreed.
So do you guys know what I mean? So if you're a person who likes Pepper Potts, right?
Yes.
I feel like when you come into reading about Tony Stark... Bully for you, because 90% of fics about Tony Stark are going to have a very mischaracterized Pepper Potts, or going to have a Pepper Potts who is immediately killed, maligned, made out to be a bitch, otherwise gotten out of the way. So even if you like the shipping and you're not looking for gen fic, if you're a person who just likes Pepper Potts as a character, then you're going to have difficulty with that, I think. Because people are in such a rush... I think, to write the OTP. Do you have, you guys ever feel that way?
Okay, I have a few. I've read a ton of fan fictions, and I have seen it happen more times than I'd like to admit. I see it a lot with Ginny Weasley. She gets bashed so much in Harry Potter fan fiction because Harry Potter is the main character in the series, so he's shipped a lot with many different people. Hermione, Luna, Pansy, Snape, anyone. And... Well, I've only read Harry and Hermione fics. I find there's a lot of Ginny brainwashed, or Ginny used the love potion, or she had him under a spell or whatever, so that way they'd be together. And then something happens where Hermione gets Harry out of this trance, and then they bash Ginny, and they end up happily ever after, kind of thing. And I don't like reading that at all. Like, it completely turns me off of the story when that happens, because canonly, Ginny Weasley would never, ever do anything like that. Even, in my opinion, in the fandom as well. She's not manipulative and backstabbing, from what I gather. It really bothers me.
I think, maybe if I can try to psychoanalyze this a bit, I think a lot of this comes from at least one person in the OTP pairing is the character that we, if we were literal, genuine Mary Sues, would want to try to be with. It's like, I mean, you were saying how much you love Tony Stark. If you ended up in Marvel, and you could, I didn't even have to finish the sentence. Yes. So,
totally.
You're okay with fun times between the two characters that you're allowing, because they're not a threat to your adoration of one of the two characters, or both characters, or all three characters. But generally speaking, the bashing happens with the canonical interrupter of the OTP. That person is literally the real-life threat. And I think that's why those characters, the Ginny, the Peppers, the Kate Beckets, they get so... worked over in fandom because they're that bitch in your class who is in the way of you and the cute boy.
Definitely.
Never mind that the bitch in the class and the cute boy have been in love since grade six and they're going to get married and they're fantastic for each other and they make each other better people. They're just in your way. And I think that's part of it. But I think that's also, it's also part of, again, going back to the experience of being a young girl growing up in fandom, I think that's also sort of reflective of this whole high school mentality when where we're told that we need to compete with every other girl for the better marks, the better looks, the affection of the men, all this other stuff. So we sort of get ingrained with this from modern media, from media texts, that other girls are the competition.
Definitely.
And that's where you get that crap, like, I'm not like other girls. Like, there's nothing wrong with other girls. But that's where all of that kind of misogynistic, internalized misogynistic crap comes from. Mm-hmm. And I think it does sometimes come out in fanfiction. You're like, you know, Steve's better for Tony because Pepper's a bitch.
With Pepper, I like to see the ones where even if they did break up, she's still an active part in the story. In a good way, like she's still being super supportive and still loves Tony, but just not in the romantic relationship kind of way. Those ones I don't mind. It's just I don't like when people bash. I just want everyone to be friends.
Well, I think too, also, it again, this kind of goes into sometimes the way I feel like shipping can get in a way of enjoying a story, because I've seen a lot of people right now as well in the whole kind of Stucky Stony War thing, where I've seen a lot of posts getting really, really angry at anybody who calls Bucky a villain. And I've seen a lot of posts getting really, really angry at anybody who calls Tony a villain, because there's been a tendency on both sides to characterize the other person as a basically evil person. So anyone who doesn't like Tony will point out, well, he's going to be the villain of Civil War, you know, and he's really awful and he's done this or this or that. And someone who doesn't like Bucky will say, well, he's an assassin and he's a murderer.
That's one of my pet peeves, actually.
And what's interesting to me is that, but they'll go and they'll do these kind of contortionist mental backflips trying to deny that anybody could ever look at Bucky and see anything less than a perfect cinnamon roll of a human being who's great for Steve. Or, like, they'll do these contortions to say, you know, Tony's not really a hero. He's never been since the beginning. You know, and these are the same people who 2 years ago were loving the Iron Man movies. And what bothers me is, guys, Civil War, part of the whole point is probably going to be the question of is Tony or is he not a villain? And is Bucky or not a villain? And guess what? Those are not questions that there is a particular side you can take. Those are ethical questions that the characters themselves are probably going to wrestle with.
Questions of complex characterization, and I think what you're both talking about is the frustration when people simplify and shallowize a character in order to serve their own plots and their own OTPs. It's not being respectful of all the characters in the...
Definitely. I'm one of the ones who it's one of my pet peeves and they call them villains, in my personal opinion, because you don't have to be a villain to be an antagonist in a story. Just because you're like the antagonist doesn't mean you're technically the villain, if that makes sense.
I'm giving you a standing ovation in my head right now.
Oh, perfect. Because yes, Bucky is an antagonist in Winter Soldier, but that doesn't make him a villain. Civil War, Tony Stark is technically, I guess, the antagonist to Steve, but that doesn't make him a villain at all, by all means.
Well, and Steve is the antagonist to Tony. They're both definitely the protagonist, and they're both the antagonist.
Definitely. So this villain, throwing around the villain word, I don't think I think it's not true.
What I dislike, though, is the people who, they will write about Bucky, and if anybody even says he murdered a bunch of people, potentially including Tony's parents... Oh, but it was all brainwashing. It was nothing to do with him and forgive him. And
this is going back to exactly what I said, is the people who are so invested identity-wise that they can't separate a discussion about fictional characters from an attack on the person.
I find that fandom and canon get confused a lot. Like, what actually happened in canon versus what you've read in a fan fiction or what you perceive as happened gets muddled. I know personally that happens to me when I try and remember Harry Potter facts, because it's been a little bit since I read the books, and I've read fan fiction more often than books. So sometimes I'm like, did this really happen, or did I just read this somewhere or thought it up? So I feel like that definitely attributes to certain people, but they need to realize that there's a separation.
I have a great example of canon versus fanon. Have you seen the movie Labyrinth?
No, I have not.
Oh!
I'm so sorry.
That's right. Again, I'm probably a decade older than both of you. So, in Labyrinth, for the listeners out there who've seen Labyrinth, the question is, what is the stepmother's name? If you read enough fan fiction, people say it's Karen. Canonically, she's credited in the script as stepmother. All that happened is one influential fic decided to name her Karen, and then everyone thought her name was Karen, and then everyone picked it up. And that's how fanon becomes, or that's how become something becomes fanon. And again, exactly like you said, the wars that have happened over, you know, the name of the stepmother is ridiculous.
So here's another question about one of the ways in which shipping could potentially be somewhat problematic. Do you guys actually think that maybe the emphasis on shipping is part of the reason why men don't read or write more fan fiction? And I'm not saying that's a problem. Like, if they don't want to, we can have it. I'm fine with that. But do you think that that might contribute to why?
I definitely think that's part of the reason that mainstream news agencies don't understand what fan fiction is. I genuinely believe that that's why there's so many white, cisgendered, heterosexual, older generation men writing op-eds and writing investigative journalism pieces and talking about fandom and fanfiction in mainstream news outlets because they don't understand it. They can't figure it out.
I saw an article while I was researching some stuff for the podcast today, and I was like, okay, what's some popular Harry Potter OTPs? Maybe that I've missed or whatever, and an article popped up from MTV, and I was like, hey, this is a little weird, and it started off normal. I thought it was going to be a pretty decent article at first, because it talked about Neville and Luna, and then it went into Fox and Nagini, and then Peter Pettigrew and Ron Weasley, and it just started just slamming it, essentially, like making these pairings that aren't even really pairings, and just being mean about it, and I think that's like that stigma about fan fiction definitely deters people from it.
Well, it's definitely that idea that anything that young girls love must inherently be bad. I mean, for as problematic as Twilight is, it's not a bad series because it's beloved by young girls. It's inherently less. I mean, to go off on a bit of a tangent about that, the reason that so much of fan fiction is based around romantic relationships and domestic situations and figuring out relationships and fighting and getting back together and having awkward, weird sex and wonderful, amazing sex is because we never see that on the show. We never see it. So we're writing about the parts of our lives that are very important to us. Our interpersonal relationships are the most important parts of our social communication and our lives. And we don't see that on television. It just goes back to why people write fan fiction and do fan art. And A, because it's fun, but B, because there's something missing. Exactly like you said, if it's making room for Mary Sue at Hogwarts. It's forcing a subject position or an identity that is voiceless into the center. And there are a lot of queer ships for a reason. I mean, yes, it's fun to watch two dudes make out in the same way it's fun to watch two ladies make out or people of non-binary sexualities and genders. Just watching people making out is fun, but it's also forcing a queer narrative into a story that doesn't allow.
Well, and I also think it's important to remember too that while a great deal of fan fiction is shipping, the problem as well is that when the mainstream focuses on that, they are also missing the idea that there are a lot of fantastic genfic being written all the time. I think it's always funny to me when you'll have somebody go in and make fun of bad fanfic, like a Graham Norton, because I feel like in the mainstream, they will pick and choose the weirdest stuff that they can find. They will pick the rare pair that doesn't actually exist, as you mentioned with that Harry Potter article die. Yeah. They will find the thing that's weird, and in order to find the thing that's weird, they will pass over, you know, a few dozen perfectly acceptable, great, lengthy gen fics or canon fics, you know, or fics that are slash, but they're not doing the weird stuff that the person wants to focus on. So the final thing I want to talk to you guys about is variations on the OTP. So we've mentioned OT3s, we've mentioned no-TPs, we've mentioned bro-TPs. Let's talk a little bit about some of these variations. So I know, Dai, you said you're a fan of OT3s. OT3s, yeah. Being, you know, pairings that have more than two people. We're looking at polyamory at that point. JM, do you have a particular opinion of OT3s? Do you have any that you ship?
Have you read Triptych? Just saying. my debut novel is an OT3. I mean, Kelp, Basil, Gwen, for the win. But I have an OT4. I really love Tayla Imogen and Ronan and John Shepherd and Rodney McKay. I just love their team dynamic. It was so nice that it was really fun and interesting to see how that exact same dynamic tumbled over into the bedroom, just, you know, bossy McKay and Tayla just, you know, kicking everybody's ass and tying them up and doing what she wanted. I always found that really entertaining because they had such a really wonderful patter and a wonderful amount of just the weird zingy chemistry. And it's always fun to see that transferred into the bedroom.
I think the original OT3 for a lot of people is Bones, Spock, and Kirk. And I have to say, I'd never really watched a lot of the original series, but when I saw the 2009 Star Trek movie, it wasn't for me Kirk and Spock, it was like all three. Oh my goodness, all three. Because you need Bones there. Well, because the thing is, Kirk and Spock are just so antagonistic, and Bones is also sometimes so antagonistic, but I feel like he's voice of reason antagonistic. So I kind of feel like when you take him out of it, I'm not interested. But all three? Hell yeah. So what about bro TPs? So that's when you basically ship friendship. You ship, like, two bros just being bros. Dai.
Science bros for life.
Ah, yes!
Tony and Bruce are my science bros for life. I love that. I love their interactions and, like, they get each other in terms of, like, the science-y things. So when they go off on tangents about, like, gamma radiation or, like, physics or something, and everyone else is kind of like, what's going on? What is this gibberish? They're just completely connecting, and it's so adorable, and I can't handle it.
Yeah, you know, I don't need to ship that section,
No.
I feel like there's something about that being platonic that's just feels right. Definitely. And what I loved is that Avengers Age of Ultron had so much science bros in it that they had to montage that, because there was just too much for the movie without montaging
it. I love it.
Bro TPs. I would definitely Lestrade and Watson. Just because they both look at Sherlock and go, ugh.
And then how do we feel about no TPs? So you've mentioned a couple of yours, JM. Dai, do you have any no TPs?
I try not to have a no TP. Like, I'll usually read anything, and if I don't read it, then I just don't care for it. I won't necessarily avoid it like a plague.
It's not like a violent physical reaction. Oh my god.
True.
It's like, that's true. Oh, I saw that in the tags. I'm not interested.
That's how I feel like about a lot of the incesty ships. It's just as a squick for me. And in particular, I kind of, like you said about Wincest, like Wincest for me is one that I at least see where it's coming from, but I don't really get Thorky. Because there's so much brotherly affection between him and Loki that you see, especially in Thor the Dark World, that I'm a little bit like, I just don't see it.
Well, and I really do, I do love me some good Baggins shield, and I don't understand, like, Bilbo dwelling. I don't get it. I just don't see it. And the ones where, well, you know, talking about OT3s and OT4s, there's OT14s where it's, you know.
OT8, OT6s.
Yeah,
Bilbo, that's the Avengers
company.
Definitely.
Now we're going to do some fic recs. And I know JM and Di have brought a couple of good fics that basically feature an OTP and explore their romance in a suitably epic way. Why don't you tell us about your fic rec?
I really love this one. Get Loved, Make More, Try to Stay Alive by Thera Sudis, which is a Torchwood fic where my slash OTP, Jack Harkness, Nia Jones, is canon. We don't need Photoshop. Our ships are canon. And I really like that one because it's all about what happens to Jack Harkness after Ianto Jones dies, because Jack is effectively immortal. He cannot die. So what happens when somebody like, and not even a vampire, he can't bring Ianto into immortality with him. What happens to that kind of a person when they love so strongly and so desperately, knowing that the other person is going to have to die? So it's beautiful and angsty, and it works, and I cry every time I read it, and I read it a lot. It's beautiful.
Excellent.
So my fanfic rec is Our Paths Unfold by Silver_Drip, and it's an AU Frost Iron, and it's essentially Tony is a god. It's all set in Asgard, and essentially he is Tony Howardson. He is god of metal, Boiler of Eyes, and Gear Talker, essentially. And it goes on about how Tony was raised in Asgard and his interactions with Loki and the rest of the Aesir's as well, so Thor and all them. And then they separate for a bit and they come back, and it's such a really well-written story. And it's a slow burn in terms of the relationship, because I think it went over 50 chapters before any reciprocated romantic scenes happened, and since it took so long, when it actually happened, it was like I had to like stop for a minute and just kind of absorb it all. It was so well written. I think it's on 61 chapters now, and it is amazing. I definitely recommend that one.
So I'm gonna ask the two of you now to share some final thoughts on the subject of OTPs and shipping. And we'll start with you, JM.
I think OTPs are awesome, and it's a great way to engage with the fandom. Have fun, enjoy all of it, but also please remember Wheaton's Law. Don't be a dick.
Oh, I don't know if I can top that.
Di, what's your final thoughts on OTPs and shipping?
I think it's an amazing, creative way to look at the fandoms that we all love so much. And I think that we should all just be respectful of what other people's OTPs are, what they ship. They might not like the same things you might like, but all in all, we still love the same fandom. So we should just be nice and be friends. And when in doubt, we can OTP OT3. That's going to be like my motto.
So thanks for listening, everyone. And I want to thank Di and JM again for contributing. I also want to give another shout out to Peter Chakowski, otherwise known as Rock Paper Cynic, who has written and performed our theme song and put together our show logo for us. So again, check him out if you get an opportunity. He's really funny and wonderful. If you want to know when a new episode of our show is available, which is every other Tuesday, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes and also review us there. Please do that, because it does really help support the show and spread the word about it. You can also subscribe right from within Archive of Our Own by looking us up. We are the OTP, so the_OTP there, and you can use or subscribe us to be notified of new episodes the same way that you're notified of the new chapter of that fic that you're loving right now. We're also available on SoundCloud, on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr, so please come check us out. And as always, I will sign off by reminding you that your kink is not my kink, or in this case, your OTP is not my OTP, and that's okay.